Philippians 3:17. Last year at the evangelism conference, Brother Lindo had suggested that we present more of the things we do and why we do it, because we're peculiar to most evangelism work throughout the world. In fact, I don't know of any that do things quite the way we do them. And I thought about it, and I wanted to, but I already had other things I wanted to say, and I couldn't come up with a good outline. I wanted to do it without boring you too much doing it, and so I decided to try it this year. And that's what I want to do. So I don't really have a sermon for you or anything. I just want to go through and explain what we do and how we do it, why we do it the way we do. And at the end, if you have any questions, I'll be welcome to take a few questions if you would like, if I don't make things clear of the things we do. The main difference that we have between the way we do the evangelism or the way we do the work we do and many other ways is that we try the best we can to do things strictly as the Bible teaches us. We believe that the book of Acts, particularly Acts 13 through 28 and the epistles, teach us how the work should be done and that we don't have the liberty to innovate our own method. That we are to follow Paul's example. And we're going to base loosely, just get started here, on verse 17 of chapter 3 in Philippians. It says, "Brethren, be followers together of me and mark them which walk so as ye have us for an example." And you find this repeated in Paul's epistles various times, that we are to follow Paul's example. And this is not just a filler in his epistles. He actually meant for us to do this. He actually believes himself to be ordained by God as the apostle of the Gentiles. And he says clearly in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 10, that he is the wise master builder. He laid the foundation. Everyone else builds thereon. And so we're to follow his example, which, if you pick up in Acts 13 through 28, is the way Paul did his work. And we believe that Paul did his work in a way that was correct, or the way God had ordained him to be. In other words, that Paul wasn't a dummy stumbling from city to city, figuring out as he went. We see, and you follow out, if you take Acts 13 on and read through Paul's ministry, you'll find he had a very definite, very clear understanding of what needed to be done and how it needed to be done. And Paul's very clear on the fact that there is a right way and a wrong way to do the Lord's work. In fact, he even says that you are not crowned unless you strive lawfully. There's a correct way to do it, and there is no crown, there's no reward, there's no recompense if you do it wrong. There's the ends do not justify the means. And this is the difference between the way we strive, or we try to do the work in Mexico and Poland and other areas, and the way we see it done in many ways. And I'm not here to criticize, and I want to emphasize this, I'm not here to criticize any of the other works. They do it however they want. It does not hurt me. It's not detrimental to our work in any way. However, we can't help but observe that the way they do things is not biblical, and that we must, as Bible-believing Christians, do things the way God stipulates in the Word of God. And this is taught to us throughout the whole thing. And what we see is that it is a gross disregard for the Bible, and particularly the book of Acts, when they just assume that Paul's method, Jesus' method, the apostles' method, the church's method, as it is told us in the book of Acts, they just assume that they're antiquated, they will not work, they cannot work, and so therefore they try to find new ways to do things. Now, we don't believe that to be the case. And we believe that the Lord has proven, city after city, that God's way, Paul's way, the way that they was done in the book of Acts, can work and does work. And that you're not crowned unless you strive lawfully. That God has a way he wants things done, and you're not free to innovate your own. Now, that's what we believe. And we believe this to be true in Mexico. We believe this to be true in Poland, and we believe it to be true in San Antonio. And we believe that the way that Paul did the work should be done everywhere. That's the way we believe it should be done. So I want to go through and take the book of Acts and the epistle and show you the framework that we find for the way mission work should be done. I'm not here to tell you that you need to stand in a street corner and preach, or that you need to preach four times a night, four times a week, or two times a week. I want to give you a general framework by which we have patterned, or tried to pattern, the way we do our ministry down in Mexico. And I find that to be in Book of Acts on a framework about four categories that I want to go through. And we're going to read a bunch of verses, and I would like if you would turn to them and read them with me, because this is the whole point, that we act here trying to do it the way the Bible tells us to do it. That we are actually saying we want to start a church. Well, how did Paul start his churches? We need to discipline somebody. How did Paul discipline somebody? It's not just reach in the back and grab out, find out what happens, or come up with something off the top of your head. The point is to do it the way the Bible says. Those categories I want to touch on, I'll name them right now. I believe we're going to see the apostles' goals, the focus of the apostles, the methods of the apostles, and the principles of the apostles. And this is the framework that I see, especially Paul, that he patterned everything he did from the very beginning to the very end. It's very consistent through the book of Acts. He actually had a way of doing things. And this is what I see. So the first thing is the goals of the apostles. Let's look at the book of Acts, chapter 14, verse 21. We're just going to read as soon as we get there. 14, verse 21, confirming the souls of the disciples and exhorting them to continue in the faith, and that we must through much tribulation enter into the kingdom of God. And when they had ordained them elders in every church and prayed with them, fasting, and commended the Lord on whom they had believed. I'm sorry, I'm in. No, that's right. Okay, so what we see here is that Paul, his goal in this was to establish churches. That was one of his goals in the book of Acts. We see he went to all these cities and he went there, and one of his goals going to these cities was to ordain elders, to establish churches. This was one of the apostles' goals. He didn't just get into a city and say, well, we'll see what happens. He actually went there and he wanted to start churches. He wanted to start a church that would then do the work. Another thing he did was, we find out that they preached the gospel. And we find that throughout the book of Acts, every city he went to, that was a given in every city, he preached the gospel. If he didn't do anything else, he preached the gospel in those cities. And the other one we find in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 22, Paul says, to the weak became I as weak, that I might gain the weak. I am made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. Paul's other goal in the it was start church, it was to preach the gospel, but he actually had the goal to win souls. It was not all right with Paul to not win people. He didn't just say, so be it. You find Paul intensely occupied, or preoccupied, I should say, with winning souls. And he says, I will be all things to all men if I may win some. He was preoccupied, he was concerned with winning souls. And that is what I think is one thing that all of us need to work on more in our ministry, is that we need to be more concerned with winning souls. Now, we don't always win souls. And, you know, we preach street after street and win nobody. We go to cities and are there for a couple years and win nobody, but it's not all right. And we shouldn't just be apathetic or unconcerned with it. We should be concerned with winning souls. Now, I'm not saying that if you don't win anybody, that it's because you're in sin or because you're not doing things right, but it shouldn't be all right with you. You should, as been preached before, say, give me children lest I die. You should be concerned with winning souls, and so should we all. And we find Paul saying, I will do anything within being lawful to win souls. And so that's a goal that Paul had as he went. And another thing is that he had the goal of teaching converts. Look in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 2. It says, and the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also. This is Paul's instruction to his disciple Timothy, telling Timothy to find other men who were going to be able and teach them also. And so Paul's goal was to teach converts. And we find Paul throughout the book of Acts. He'd go to cities, preach, and he found a couple men, one or two men, who had showed promise. He took them with him to the other places, and he taught them along the way, and then he would send them back again. And so that was a goal that Paul had when he went there. So these are the goals that we have in Mexico. These are the goals I presume they have also in Poland, is that we have the goals of preaching the gospel, to save souls, to teach converts, and to establish churches. And when we say establish churches, we're not just referring to have a group of people, but we actually are talking about having a group of people with elders coming from the church themselves, deacons coming from the church themselves, that can then the church can be turned over to them, and then they are the actual elders of the church. This is the goal. that we don't want to be in that church the rest of our lives keeping an eye on it, that these churches, that they have every gift of God that they need, that they have everything supplied to them, and that they would govern their own church. So that's the goal that we find in the book of Acts, and that's what we've attempted to establish in our work. The second thing I want us to look at in this category is the focus of the apostles. That they, when they went, they not only had goals, but they had a certain focus in mind on how they did the work. Look in the book of Jonah, chapter 4, verse 11. The first focus that the apostles, I find the apostles had, or Paul had especially, when he did his work, is that he went to large cities. He did not go to villages. I've gone through every city that it mentions that he went through. I've gone through the provinces. There are many cities in those provinces. He went through Cilicia, and there's 14, 15 cities there, and he only talked about going to two, which were the two main cities at that time in that province, in that area of the country. And so he goes through these different provinces, and he completely skips over these little towns. In fact, they even have record of him saying he gets a certain city, and he sails from there, and he gets to another one, and he goes on from there until he gets to Corinth, or Philippi, or Athens, or a place like that. And that's where he preached. He preached to large populations. Now, the problem nowadays with evangelism is that it has been humanized and effeminized far beyond what it should be. In other words, it's all about feely good feelings. It's all about these poor little villages. You got this little village and it has 1,000 people. And who's going to preach the gospel to them? We need to go to these Indian tribes up in the mountains, because who's going to ever preach the gospel to them? And I understand the point. And I understand, and you know, more power to those who go. But here is the Bible point. The Bible point is Jonah chapter 4 verse 11. It says, "And should not I spare Nineveh, that great city wherein are more than 64,000 persons that cannot discern between their right hand and their left hand, and also much cattle?" Now this is repeated several times in the book of Jonah. That great city. And Paul, we see in his travel, and by what he left as an example, he was concerned with big cities. The point of their focus is a focus of worth, of value. 1,000 people in a village are not worth more than 600,000 people in a city. Now I realize that's cold and calculated, but it is true. And these people who go and live in a city of 1,000,000 and then take a trip up to the mountains to preach to 10, they're just not thinking straight. I'm sorry, but it's true. And we're not talking about cities with large evangelists. The cities we are going to are highly unevangelized. You're talking about 97, 98% unevangelized. Hundreds of thousands of people who are not saved, and to overlook them to go to a little village is just simply not right. Now you say, who is going to preach to these little villages? Now that's a valid point. Well, the Bible also has the answer. You read the book of Acts, you read the epistles, Romans chapter 1, verse 14 to 15 talks about it, that the churches that he started, they spread the gospel to the villages around them. That's how they did it. Paul did not go to the villages. He went to the large cities, he preached the gospel, started churches, and those churches then said their faith spread throughout the whole region. And that's how they won these little cities, these little villages. The church did it. One of the things you'll find out that most evangelists or missionaries, however you choose to call them, find after, you know, they go with these expectations or hopes. They're going to go to these little villages and they're going to get them all converted and they're going to make them king and, you know, whatever. It doesn't happen. We preach in villages and we preach there many years. We go to these little villages around the city, and they don't believe. They're highly critical. They're highly skeptical. In fact, you're very unlikely to ever break ice there. And usually, the ones who win souls in these villages are people from the very villages that go back. And that's who we have found have success in these areas. When we win somebody in the larger city, they go back to their home village, they preach there, and they actually stand more of a chance. But you're talking about a lifetime of work in these smaller cities, in these smaller villages. And we see Paul, he was going to these large cities, establishing churches, and then he'd move on to another city, and those churches then had lifetime to preach to these small villages. And so that's what their focus was. And if you don't, you know, I realize that some of you may not agree with me. Fine. Read Acts 13 on. Find out where Paul preached. It's every time it's a large city. Every single time. That's where he went. And then his churches he left, they preached to the smaller city. That's just how he did it. Now, you can say, well, I don't agree. That's fine. Don't agree. But that is how he did it. And that is how we attempt to do things. Another thing he did is, he not only went to large populations, he went to open opportunities. You do not find Paul beating his head against closed countries. In fact, the moment the gospel was prohibited, the moment it was illegal or impossible for him to preach the gospel freely, he left every single time. Every time, he just left. They stoned him, he went back into town, said goodbye to everyone, and went on to another town. They made a law, they said, you cannot preach in a boy. He preached, they enforced it, he left. He only preached, from what we have the record of Acts, if that means anything, he only preached to open opportunity. And again, it's a matter of work. It's a matter of value. What makes a country of equal population, of equal evangelization, worth more if it's closed than a country that's open? What makes a Muslim country worth more than a Catholic country? What makes a million Muslims worth more than a million Catholics? In order to say that we're willing to compromise our biblical example, to compromise our biblical teaching of how the work should be done. If they're not. I realize that, again, this is cold, and you won't hear this in most places. You won't hear this from most people. However, you read the book of Acts, and this is exactly what they did. They went to open opportunities. Let's just look at a few of them. Acts 13:50. We won't go through all of them. There's almost every city Paul preached in, this happened. So we could go through almost every chapter and find it. We'll just read a couple. But the Jews stirred up the devout and honorable women and the chief men of the city and raised persecution against Paul and Barnabas and expelled them out of their coast. But they shook off the dust. They shook off the dust of their feet against them and came unto Iconium. And that's what happens every time. They kick him out and he leaves and he goes to another area. They kick him out of the whole province. He crosses the sea and finds another area where the gospel is open. It's always open opportunity. You know, it's not that we don't appreciate the salvation of souls in closed countries. Not that we don't pray for this. But Paul had a very specific method of doing things, and he went to open opportunities, open doors every time. And what do we do? What do we do with countries where they're closed, where you can't preach the gospel, where you can't proselytize? You pray for them, that God will open the door. Just like people prayed for years for Russia and Romania and Czechoslovakia and Poland. And when the door opens, then you have an opportunity. And then you send off people like Brent or Joe or me or somebody else or one of you to go to an open country where you can actually do the work that is taught in the Bible. And the other thing, which I've touched on already, their focus. They focus on unevangelized areas. Oh, Paul states, he makes it very clear in Romans 15:20. Yea, so have I strived to preach the gospel, not where Christ was named, lest I should build upon another man's foundation. And this was what categorized Paul's preaching. He always went where the gospel had not been preached. He was looking for areas that were unevangelized. In fact, with the one mention he makes of going to Rome was only passing through to go to Spain, because Rome already had a church. And so that's why we're in the Bajío. That's why we're in Querétaro and Morelia and Aguascalientes and area others like that are 95, 96, 97% unevangelized. That's why we aren't in Saltillo or, you know, Chiapas or other places like that are there. Chiapas is, the last time I read, was almost 20% Christian, highly evangelized. And yet there's a huge flux of preachers and missionaries, evangelists going to these areas. And yet they're highly evangelized. And the teaching of Paul is that we should be looking for places where it is unevangelized, where the gospel of Christ has not been known. And again, it's a matter of work. We don't want to look at this, but it's what it is. It's a matter of value. It's what makes one city more valuable than another, when there are more people that are lost than the other, when the percentage is much higher. You know, a lot of times we want to look at it, and we want to go from a sense of, let's have compassion, but compassion must be ruled by the brain. If not, we start doing things that are not biblical and that are not logical. And this is what Paul did, is not only biblical, it is also logical, that the focus he had on these things. And I believe that those of us here that preach here in San Antonio need to apply this focus also. I went down and I've been asked by several brothers what I think of preaching at the Alamo. So I'm going to tell you what I think of preaching at the Alamo. I think there are better places to preach. Let me state why. Those times I've gone to the Alamo, I had to stand in line, literally, to preach the gospel at the Alamo. When there are many other parks downtown who have no preachers, and there are many streets who have never had someone knock on their door or tell them the gospel right here in San Antonio. What makes the people at the Alamo worth more than the people on some other street that have never heard the gospel, that they merit, they're worth so much that they merit 80 preachers on Sunday and the other ones zero? It's a matter of worth. It's a matter of value. Now, like I say, you know, I may not be popular for saying this. You may not agree. But I challenge you. Read Acts, read the epistles, and find out how Paul did his work. See if this is not Paul's focus and interest when he did his work. Next thing I want to touch on that we see of the book of Acts and the epistles were the method of the apostles, how they did things actually. And I'm not going to go into we have gone over, and many of the brothers, Bill and Brent, have mentioned about preaching the gospel. Bill preached last year about what is preaching the gospel, how should the gospel be preached. I'm not going into that. I want to be a lot more general on this because I want to apply both to men and women, because we do not believe, at least I do not believe, that women should be street preachers. Which is, I don't agree with it. In our church in Kedetho, women do not street preach, even though Marty begs every day. We just say no. Just say no. That's got a shirt. Just say no. But we believe that women can and should be actively involved in evangelism. Door knocking, passing out tracts, talking to people. They accompany us. Many women in our churches accompany us to the preaching, and when we're done preaching, they go around also and help us. There's a lot of times, not always, a lot of times there's nobody, but sometimes we have a lot of people listening. Sometimes. And so, you know, we don't have a chance to talk to them all, and so we are very thankful, and I'm very proud of the ministry of the women in our church, who go around and talk to these people, and bring people to meetings, and win souls. And so I want to give a general framework of what their methods were. First of all, I find that their methods were personal. In other words, they did not preach or evangelize by proxy. They themselves did the work. We have too many people now that consider themselves having done something because they left a tract at a table. And I'm not downing on leaving tracts. That's great. But that is not the example of the apostles. When they did things, they did it personally. They actually spoke with their mouth to somebody. They actually looked them in the eye. They actually told them the gospel. It was personal. Jesus himself did it this way. Remember when he appoints the 70 and he sends them out to preach? It says he sent them to the cities where he would then go. He didn't just appoint 70 and say, well, now I'm off to my vacation because I found somebody to take my place. There is nobody to take your place. You cannot send me or my dad or Adrian or Bill or Brent or Joe off to another country and say, I've done my work, I've done my part, because you haven't. The methods of the apostles is that they did things personally. They actually did those things. They actually did it. And, you know, we find a lot of places. Look at 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 5. But watch thou in all things, endure affliction, do the work of an evangelist, make full proof of thy ministry. Paul tells Timothy, do the work of an evangelist. It may not be your gift, it may not be your ministry, but you personally must do the work of an evangelist. Personally. You can't appoint other people to do it, you have to do it. And that applies to everybody. In our church in Mexico, nobody teaches in our Sunday meetings unless they are actively involved in evangelism. Now, whether that be 8 times a week or one time a week, it makes little difference as long as they're actively involved in evangelism. And if they're not, we don't allow them to teach. We don't appoint them as elders or as deacons or anything else. They have to be personally involved in evangelism. Now, if they want to knock on doors, if they want to go talk to people on benches, whatever. As long as there's a personal involvement with evangelism. The second method I find, or general method, is that their methods were public. They were public. They did not hide in corners. They were not in the catacombs, hidden. They were not in church buildings when they tried to evangelize. Their evangelization was always a public effort. It was always out in the open. And that's why Paul left as soon as it became publicly impossible. As soon as he could not conduct a public ministry, he left. Now, what is public? That's what I mean. What I mean by public, and what I see in the book of Acts, is that they actually went out to the people. Do not expect the people to come to them. If they went to their individual houses and spoke to them, or they went to the synagogues, or the park, or the rivers, wherever it is they went, but they went to the people, they took the gospel, go ye into all the world, not bring the world into the church. It was a public ministry. Paul substantiates this in the book of Acts, chapter 26, verse 26. It says, "For the king knoweth of these things, before whom also I speak freely, for I am persuaded that none of these things are hidden from him, for this thing was not done in a corner." That was false testimony of the gospel, that they're not done in a corner, that they're public, they're open, that everyone knows about these things. They're not hidden. And the third general method that I find is that they're personal, they're public, and that their methods were provocative. They weren't out to offend anybody. In fact, we find Paul that his own detractors were not able to bring up accusations, that he purposely offended them. When we find in Ephesus that they caused an uproar over Diana and the temple and all that, the prince of the ruler of the people, he came out and said, "What have they ever said against Diana?" And they weren't able to come up with anything. And so it wasn't that he was out belittling their religion. It wasn't that he was out badgering their belief, but he was provocative. The gospel was not offered as an option. It was that God demanded all men everywhere to repent. No option. Not option. If you don't believe the gospel according to the apostles' preaching, you were wrong. Now, of course, they were not like the Catholic Church and many of the Protestant churches who went around with swords and armies forcing people to believe, but they were clear on this point. There is no three sides to this issue. You're either right or you're wrong. And we find that with Jesus Christ himself also. Jesus told people, "You're either with me or you're against me. There's no middle ground." And so that's how theirs was. And Paul says in the book of Philippians, chapter 1, verse 28, says, "And in nothing terrified by your adversaries, which is to them an evident token of perdition, but to you of salvation and that of God. For unto you it is given in the behalf of Christ, not only to believe on him, but also to suffer for his sake, having the same conflict which you saw in me and now here to be in me." So Paul says that he had a conflict. When he preached the gospel, it caused a conflict. It was provocative. And he says, "You have the same conflict. The same conflict that was in me, you have also. And I believe we have as well. I believe that we have effeminized the gospel." I'm speaking of humanity, of Christianity as a whole, have effeminized the gospel too much. Where it is an issue of not making people feel bad. And I'm not advocating offending people on purpose, or being overly insensitive, or just going out to show how cruel or mean someone can be. But we are not to take away from the offense of the cross of Christ. There is an offense associated with Jesus Christ, and there is no lawful way to rid that. There will be provocation if the gospel is preached correctly. The last thing I want to touch on are the principles of the apostles. And these are perhaps the more well-known part of our ministry, that at least from people I've talked to, when they're mentioning or we talk about what we do, this is what mainly comes up, what we consider to be the principles of the apostles. First principle is that the gospel is free. We do not take offerings from the people we preach to. The gospel should be free. Now, I want to, because of this and because of this stand, many of us tend to see people, like I see some at the Alamo, who take offerings while they're preaching, and we tend to criticize them. But you have to remember one thing, and this is the interesting part of Paul being our example, that Jesus Christ told his preachers to go into the city, find a house, to live there, for them to feed them until they left. Paul changed it. Paul said he went to the cities and did not take anything by his choice. He said, "I have a right." Paul teaches in 2 Corinthians that he had a right to receive offerings from the people he preached to. It's not wrong. It's right. But since Paul says, "I'm your example, follow me," Paul did not take offerings. He said he gave the gospel free. So what did Paul do? Well, look at 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 7. I mentioned this once to Brother Snavely and his wife, Neil and Clara Snavely. We're at Roger and Marie's, I believe, we're talking. And I mentioned this verse. You know, Miss Snavely, I thought she was going to choke me. We had a good conversation. I love them, but they were going to choke me. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 7, says, "Have I committed an offense in abasing myself that ye might be exalted, because I have preached to you the gospel of God freely? I robbed other churches, taking wages of them to do you service. And when I was present with you and wanted, I was chargeable to no man for that which was lacking to me, the brethren which came from Macedonia supplied, and in all things I have kept myself from being burdensome unto you, and so will I keep myself. And this is where he basically goes in and explains how the gospel's free. Because nothing's free. The gospel's free in Kerepheto because I robbed you. Now this is what she didn't like. Miss Navy didn't like me saying that I robbed her, because she says, I give my offerings freely, and I want to give them, and I realize that, and we are appreciative, and this is not being detrimental, but the point is, I offer no services in return to you. I'm not like your elder who preach to you every Sunday, and you give them offerings because you partake of their spiritual blessings, and so you give them carnal. We give you nothing. We're not here. That's why Paul says, I robbed the other churches. I wasn't ministering to them, but I received offerings from them so the gospel could be free. And this is how Paul set it up, and it really is incredible the way it's set up, where we go and preach in Kerepheto, and they give us nothing, nothing, nothing at all. The way they repay us or the gospel is that they then send their own people to another city so they preach the gospel also free. And that's how Paul set it up, and so that's what we do. So the gospel is free, and that's how we do the work, that we do not take anything from these people. If they offer to give us money, we do not accept it. Now, we do eat at their houses, and we invite them to tacos. They invite us. What Bill has called tokens of friendship, and that's basically what it is. But anything of true value, we don't accept. We can't accept. The gospel must be free, not only in reality, but in perception also. The gospel must be free. The second principle of the apostles was that the gospel was worthy. And this is where I want to spend a little bit more time. I ran through the other ones, not because I minimized them, but because I wanted to spend a little bit more time on these last two. When I say that the gospel is worthy, we're saying it does not need to be packaged. It does not need to be enhanced. It does not need puppets to get real specific. It does not need mimes. We have a couple brothers in the church in Aguas who their profession is clowns, and they're actually very good at it. But I would be against, and this, whatever value it is to them, it's not my church, they may not care. Most people don't. But I would be against them using their profession to preach the gospel because of this. Because it is saying the gospel is not worthy. That in some way, we need to help it, we need to enhance it, we need to package it so that people will accept it. Chalk talk. A lot of people do chalk talk. More power to them. However, I do not. I can't draw. And besides that, if I could, the gospel is worthy to be proclaimed. It does not need enhancement. Paul himself said in 1 Timothy that it was a faithful saying and worthy of all acceptation. Now, the gospel itself is worthy to be heard, to be preached, and to be believed. It doesn't need to be helped in any way. And that is what we're seeing in most churches nowadays. At least that's what I'm seeing in the churches that surround me. They have what I call the full package. They got bus services, and they got Christian pews, and they've got choirs, and they've got a performance they put on, and everything's timed out to the minute, and it's a package. And all so they can get people in to hear the gospel. And people get saved. Well, praise the Lord. However, I believe that you're not crowned unless you strive lawfully. That there's a lawful way to do the work of God. And I don't find Paul packaging the gospel. He believed that the gospel by itself was all that was needed. Now, not all will believe. And this may be the motivating factor behind packaging the gospel to lift the quota of people who actually believe it. But Paul said that those who don't believe it's because they're blinded by the devil. And no amount of packaging is going to take away their blindness. You can get professions of faith, but you can't produce real salvation. The Bible calls real salvation a new birth, and only God can do this. This is His miracle, His work. No one else can do this. And the gospel, that's why the gospel alone is worthy of these things. That's why we don't think. We don't perform any type of service for the people, and that's basically what you're saying. You're saying the gospel isn't worthy, so I'm going to do something to merit you listening to me, and then I'll slip in the gospel later. It's just simply not this. Even though more people listen, even though more people pay attention, it's not the way the apostles did. It's not the way Paul did. And the last principle that I want to draw on a little bit more is that the gospel is complete. And not only does it need to be packaged, it doesn't lack anything. You are not taken away in any measure from the gospel if you do not perform medical services to the people you preach. A lot of people think that. Many people think that if you don't put shoes on their feet, clothes on their back, and food on their table, that you're not really preaching the gospel. That's why most people are very uninterested in the way we do things. They just really are. It just doesn't interest them. They say, what do you do? Well, at about 10 o'clock, we go out in the street and we knock on the doors and we give them a tract and we tell them we're going to be preaching the gospel in about 10 minutes. And they say, where? And we say, right out here in the street. And of course, they don't understand. They've never heard it. But so we stand on the street and we preach. We shout the gospel. And when we're done, we go around to whoever might be listening and say, do you have any questions? Would you like to talk more? Would you like a Bible study? Would you like us to come back and follow up and talk to you, show, teach you the Bible? That's what we do. There it is. It requires no money to speak up. Now, if you have to live, you have to live regardless, right? It requires actually a lot less time. In fact, the brothers in our church who work full time preach at least twice a week. And so, you know, it's just very uninteresting. There's no administration involved. And that's what Christianity has turned into. A bunch of administrators. And that's why they like buses. We have a man in our church who gave a church that he was going to before he was saved. He didn't know he wasn't saved. Well, they told him he wasn't saved, and then he gave them this bus. And the bus was terrible. He offered it to me when he came to our church. And I turned it down. It wasn't because I'm so spiritual. That bus just wasn't worth it. You know, it was terrible. It was a rat trap. Anyway, he gives it to them, and so immediately they start calling him brother. And all of a sudden, now he's saved. Because, you know, you give these churches, and I won't mention names, but you give one of these churches a bus, and you're a brother. This is how it works, you know. And the reason why this is like that is because we got these administrators. And you can't administrate if you have nothing to administrate. So you have a bus or a van or a building or something, then you can be an administrator. And then it makes you feel more powerful. And Paul got away from these things. And it's not to say that he wouldn't have buildings or buses. The point was that he, first and foremost, called himself a preacher. Read it. At least twice, if memory serves. He says, I'm a preacher. And the second thing he mentions, I'm an apostle. That was his thing. I'm a preacher. That was it. That was what he mentioned first. That was his focus, his interest. Because he believed the gospel to be complete. He believed it to be complete. Now, this has some other issues involved when we say the gospel is complete. Some other ramifications. That is that we don't give these people anything but the gospel. Not only do we believe the gospel is complete, we exercise or we live the gospel complete. And we give them nothing but the gospel. And right, and you say, man, it's just because that's the easy way out. Oh, give me a break. You know, I've been preaching now for 14 years. I've been a pastor of a church for over 10. It's not the easy way out. It's the easiest thing for me to do is take out my credit card and pay them for whatever it is that they're hurting. We got a lady in our church right now. We have a couple ladies in our church right now. The taxes just went up on businesses. Mexico, the smallest tax bracket. You guys just got a tax cut. They got a tax raise. The smallest tax bracket now in Mexico for business is 45% of what you make goes to the government. Everybody pays 15%. Now, you know, that may not sound bad, but you got to remember, minimum wage is $5 a day in Mexico. That's minimum wage, and that's what most people make, $5 a day. And so they're paying these things, and we got several ladies in our church who are completely bankrupt. I need to call them. I got to keep in touch with them. They might lose their house. We don't know what's going to happen. And their debts, they got debts, and right now the interest rate, going interest rate, if you get a really good deal on a house mortgage, you might get an interest rate of 31%. She has an interest rate of 144%. She borrows $1,600, and in a year she'll pay $4,500. Now dollars, you know, if I said that, you said, hey, I got $1,006, some of us might even have it right now in our wallet. But for these people, that is, if you are a professional, making good money, that's 3 years' wages, what she owes. Now, I could take one credit card and completely pay off her debt with one credit card. And really not, you know, I'd have to pay for a while, but it wouldn't hurt me, it wouldn't kill me. And that's the easiest thing for me to do. You or something, I don't say you, I don't know how you regard this or us or the way we do things, but a lot of people who are talking to us about it critically think that we're very cold and callous because of this. But we love these people. I love them like if they were my own family. I'd cut off my arm for them almost. And I would certainly pay $4,500 to save her house. This lady, and you know, just to add on to the drama, she's a widow with 5 kids. So, is it the easiest thing just to say, we don't give you nothing? Keep the change, you filthy animal. Is that? No. The easiest thing is to pay it off. They give them. But the gospel's complete. We give nothing other than the gospel. Why? Well, other than the fact that the gospel is complete, the ramification is this. We want their faith to stand on the gospel. You give anybody, if I walk in here and gave everybody in here $100, don't hold your breath. If I walked in and gave everyone in here $100, we'd always suspect your motive of you. Regardless, even if you came here sincerely, not knowing it, and you really wanted to be here, we always suspect hope and everybody else would. Why are you here? You know that's the problem in Mexican churches. We never know, nobody ever knows, if they're for real. Why are they there? Are they there because the gringo brings in power tools to help them out with their business? Are they there because the Mormons build them houses, as they do? Buy them concrete and cement and sand and help them actually build it? Are they there because we bring in a big group of young people and mix the cement for them? Is that why they're there? Why are they there? I'm not trying to be ugly to anybody, but you understand the problem. Look what Paul said in the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 2. Let's read from verse 1 to 5. And I, brethren, when I came to you, came not with excellency of speech or of wisdom, declaring unto you the testimony of God, for I determined not to know anything among you save Jesus Christ and Him crucified. And I was with you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling, and my speech and my preaching was not with enticing words of man's wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power. And here's the point. That your faith should not stand in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. Trust me, I did a few things that I might not have normally have done. And there's a reason why. That your faith would stand in the power of God. People go to our churches and they can accuse them that they're there for money. And they'll be laughed out of the park. Because we've never given them any money. They can say, you guys are there for the benefit. But there are no benefits. We won't even give them a building to meet in. We won't even rent them chairs to sit on. When we need benches, we got these benches because in the park we've outgrown our park, and so we bring buckets. We don't even bring the bucket. They bring buckets, and they bring these boards. Well, the brother who brought the boards, he had to sell his truck for financial reasons. And so he wanted to know who would take the board. And of course, all of us have vehicles. And some of them have vehicles also. But none of them with vehicles wanted to bring them, and so we sold the board. And we sit on the floor. We're not going to do it. Why? Because of what Paul teaches. His principle. That faith must stand on something more than money. That faith must be founded on something more than finances or possessions or physical or visible things. Faith must stand on principle and on power. Paul even said that he did not preach intellectually. Simply for that fact that nobody could say, you're here because Paul sounds intelligent. And these are the principles that we attempt to follow. We're not perfect. We've all of us, that I know of, have made mistakes in these things. And we regret them, believe me. Most of the times we've made exceptions, especially to this last one, we have lost the people we made exceptions with. I'm not impressed, and I'm not trying to be critical, but I want to make this real clear. I'm not impressed with these big churches in Mexico that come down with large trucks of food and things, and they distribute to the needy and help out the poor, and then they have 1,000 people in the meeting. That does not impress me. Every one of those people may be sincere. Every one of them may be saved, but I'm not impressed. I'm impressed with churches that have 50 people who have gained nothing from the gospel but Jesus Christ and Him crucified. That is impressive. That is the power of God. You go to a church in Aguascalientes, León, Querétaro, San Luis, these churches, they not only did not gain anything, many of them have lost much for the gospel. They had to sacrifice to be there. They lost their family. They lost their job or their home. Now that, to me, is impressive. And it's not because we did it, but that's the very point. Because God did it. And we know God did it because we added nothing to the gospel. When somebody believes a gospel that is complete and unadded to, you cannot say anything but that it was God who did it. The moment you add a dollar to the gospel, there's always a question about whether it was your dollar or whether it was your God. And Paul was very clear about that. It was going to be the gospel. So anyways, this is the general framework of what we do and how we do it. And yes, we are dogmatic about it. And, you know, I don't know if this is what Brother Lindell had in mind. He'll let me know, I'm sure, if it's not. Never been neat that way, right? You know, and no, yes, we are dogmatic about it. We believe that this is the right way. Or we would be doing it another way, right? So this is what we believe, and this is what we do, and what we try to do, and it's what we think other people ought to do. It's what we think you ought to do. And I'm not here saying you don't. If you do, great. Praise the Lord. But this is what we see. And this isn't all. I'm not here trying to set up specific rules and saying that right here I have this list, this criteria, and I start checking you off. Ah, you're no good. This is a general framework. And who are you accountable to? Not to me. I really want to be clear on this issue that we, or me, I guess, I hope I speak for all of us, evangelists. We do not judge your work, any one of you. We really don't. If you're not doing it the way we think you ought to, it really doesn't matter to us, personally. Because you're not accountable to us. Each one of us as ministers are directly accountable to God that we're doing things lawfully. And if you're not, and you're winning souls, well great, you know, more power to you, I'll pray for you, praise the Lord. But I'll tell you this, I emphasize this, you will not be crowned unless you strive lawfully. Now, you may not agree with what I think is lawful, that's fine. But this is what I would like to leave with you, that you consider what you're doing and how you're doing it, and that you figure out whether you're doing it the way you should. That you actually read the book of Acts with a purpose of knowing, am I doing the work of God the way I should be doing the work of God? And if you are, great. But if you're not, then you need to change, because the book of Acts is there for a reason. And it's to teach us the example of the apostles.